Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Bottom-Up Revolution. I'm your host, Tiffany Owens-Reed. I'm a writer at Strong Towns and have been hosting this podcast for a couple of months now. It's truly a joy to have these conversations with ordinary people all over the country who are taking small steps to improve their communities. I will tell you that I'm recording this, per usual, from home in Waco, where I am slowly adapting to the fact that despite my confidence and my optimism, Texas does not understand winter at all. So I've already pulled out all of my hot weather gear, and I've just come to accept that we're just not really going to ever get cold weather. That is absolutely not the case for our guest today. Today, we are joined by Maddie Novich. She is a criminal justice professor at Manhattan College, a mom of three, and an Instagram influencer living in the currently very cold and rainy New York City. She fell in love with cargo biking. You actually might know her as Cargo Bike Mama on Instagram. So she fell in love with cargo biking during a trip with her family to Europe in 2019 and launched an Instagram account when she came back to just share her love of biking around the city and also to help other people, especially other women, realize that this mobility option was totally available to them. She has grown her account organically to about 11,000 followers. And even though she might not be what we think of as your typical bike activist, I'd like to say she's doing very important work showing how fun biking can be and just growing awareness of biking as a wonderful alternative to driving simply by sharing something she loves to do. Maddie, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
So I want to start off just kind of with a quick question, like a fun question. When did you start referring to yourself as an Instagram influencer? What was that like for you?
That's a great question. I think I started to refer to myself as an Instagram influencer when I hit 1,000 followers. Okay. Then I felt like I could comfortably say, like, I have a following.
What was that like for you? Like, was there like a point where you're like, oh, wait, I think I am an influencer? Because I feel like some people, they really set out to become influencers, whereas I feel like you were just setting out to share something you love, and it kind of grew into this sphere of influence. Was that like a moment where you sort of had to realize, like, this is a thing I can tell people I do?
It definitely was a moment. And, you know, it was kind of one of those fake it till you'll make it ideas where I was just like, I'm going to call myself an influencer. And I remember starting to get invited to things as an influencer from external companies and organizations. And I was like, oh, well, if they view me as an influencer, then maybe really I am an influencer. And so I took it and owned it. And now I, you know, very squarely introduce myself as I'm a professor, I'm a mom, and I'm also an Instagram influencer.
I'm excited to jump into our conversation and hear all about your adventures biking around New York City. Let's start off with sort of a how we met story. But of course, we're talking about how you met and fell in love with the world of cargo biking. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that journey?
Absolutely. So my love of cargo biking really started when we spent the summer in the Netherlands. We love to travel, and we travel a lot with our kids. And my husband and I decided that this one particular summer, we were going to go to a place where we could bike. He had been city biking around. I had not really been biking, but we decided on going to Amsterdam and Leiden. And the house that we were staying in, of course, in true Dutch fashion, had bikes, including a classic wooden bakfiets. And actually that summer, I didn't take the bakfiets around at all, but we just spent the entire time biking. And it was great to see how efficient we could be with our kids. So then when we came back to New York City, I turned to my husband and I said, I don't think I can go back to not biking. Like, I don't care that I wasn't a biker before. We need a cargo bike and I need to buy one of these bikes. And so we made an impulse purchase from Propel Bikes down in Brooklyn and ordered our Urban Aero cargo bike that showed up, you know, a few weeks or a month and a half later. And my very first ride on my bakfiets was from the Navy Yard in Brooklyn 2 hours to Harlem. And it was love at first ride.
That's truly jumping off the deep end right there.
For sure. For sure. It was like, well, go big or go home. And it's like, yeah. You know, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this now. And my husband offered to ride the bike. And I said, well, no, like, this is my bike. I wanted it. I ordered it. I'm going to ride it. And, you know, it's either now or never. And I pulled the bike out of the shop and promptly fell over, with my kids. And then I just like lifted it back up and continued to ride back to Harlem.
You said like when you were in the Netherlands thing, they had a cargo bike. You're using what I'm assuming is the Dutch word for cargo bike.
Yes, bakfiets is the Dutch word for a front-loading cargo
bike. I'm going to leave that to you. I'm going to call it a cargo bike. So you didn't ride one that summer in the Netherlands, but then when you came back home, you were like, "That's what was it that made you kind of settle on the cargo bike when you came back to the States?"
I realized I needed to have more ownership over my time and control over my transportation. And in New York City, like, we have amazing public transit, but you have to be really patient and you have to be beholden to the train lines and the bus lines. And I just, after having sort of a taste of that freedom, I was like, I don't want to return to that. I'm too busy. I have, you know, a full-time job. I have three kids. I have doctor's appointments to go to and activities to get to. And I just can't do it well if I'm only reliant on what the city has to offer me. So no, I hadn't biked the bike, the bakfiets, but I had realized, or the cargo bike, I had realized just how amazing and liberating it could be, that kind of freedom it could offer. So I just said, we're doing it. Like, I, you know, we spent a lot of time, my husband and I spent a lot of time talking and thinking about it. We spent more time thinking about buying this cargo bike than we did buying our condo and, like, you know, what we were going to do with, you know, major purchases in our lives, because we really, you know, it's an expensive bike. And so we wanted to be really thoughtful and make sure that I was going to be using it well. So we just dove in, and I really, it's been the best purchase I think I have ever made in my entire life.
So was one of the most important factors was just getting a regular bike versus the cargo bike, the ability to transport your kids and other loads?
Yes, exactly. So I wasn't a biker before. So getting a regular bike was not something that seemed necessary or reasonable to me. Like, I never considered biking as a lifestyle before getting my cargo bike. And then it became, you know, obvious to me that I needed one of these bikes in order to cart my kids around, because that's really, you know, as a mom of three, like, my time, it's not my turn, right? My turn is to be being with my kids and taking them where they need to go. And yes, like, I'd love, you know, I carve out time for myself, but a lot of my time is spent, you know, making sure my kids have everything that they need and going where they need to go. And so whatever transit mode I picked, it needed to be something that was easy for me to cart, not only them, but the groceries and all their stuff. Like, kids just have tons of stuff. So the cargo bike was the only thing that made sense to me. And I looked at the different options. There's both the front loaders and then, of course, the long tails. And I wanted to make sure that whatever bike I picked was suitable for my size.
I was actually going to ask you about that, but you can tell us a little bit more about the technical tips you might have a little bit later. For now, what I'd love to know is what was it like introducing your children to the idea of getting around in a cargo bike? And what's it just been like embracing that style of mobility as a mom? Like you said, you're very busy. And I remember from my time living in New York City and supporting families as a off and on again nanny, you know, there's so much to do. There's so many places to get them. And sometimes the commutes by subway or buses are just not very convenient depending on where everything is located. So what's that been like for you? What's that experience like?
I mean, the conversion was really easy. My kids love being in the bike. They absolutely love it. It's fun for them. They can chat and hang out. They can eat. They are, you know, they can climb in, climb out. And, you know, for them, two, what's interesting is two of my three children really don't know a life before cargo biking. My littlest, the one who's now my middle child, really grew up being in a cargo bike. By the time she was two, she was in a bike her whole life, you know, from what she can remember. And so it's a very normalized experience for them. My older son also just loves it, right? Because he wants to be able to spend time talking to me or looking at his coin collection. And he can do that because he can sit and carry his stuff and then turn around, you know, because they sit in the front, turn around and talk to mom and tell me about the things that he's looking at in his books and his coins. And, you know, for a period of time, it was Pokemon cards. And so they've really embraced it and they love it. They look forward to it. If I ever say, "Hey, we have to take a car," they sort of, you know, they stage a small coup. And they're just like, "We're not getting a car. We don't want to be in a car. Cars make us nauseous. Like, can we please take the bike?" Or if we're taking the train, they're like, "I don't want to take the train. I just want to take my bike. I want to take your bike. I want you to bike me around." And so they love it. They really, really love it.
I can imagine that a big part of what makes it so fun for them is that continual connection to you while you all are moving around the city.
Oh, for sure. So they really enjoy, my kids are really chatty, as most children are. And so they like to engage. And it's something they can do by pointing things out that they see, or, you know, they don't feel that the commute is being interrupted by the sake of commuting, right? So we're not changing and getting into a busy subway stop, or we're standing around. They're just sort of continuing their conversation from in the house to outside our front door to in the bike to wherever we're going. And it maintains a, you know, it really makes commuting fun and enjoyable. And it is another opportunity to spend time with my children.
This idea of like commuting itself being a fun part of the day, it just kind of dawned on me the other day, like how rarely I think of doing errands or going anywhere where I live, because obviously I have to use a car, as actually fun. You know, it's very stressful. It's, you know, negotiating with other drivers the entire time. I'm just terrified of getting hit. You know, it's like looking for parking. It's, you know, driving up and down the same roads. And it's just constant vigilance, because a lot of times I'm driving around with my 5-month-year-old son and terrified of something happening. And it's just kind of crazy to think how that's been normalized, how like one of the basic human activities of going from one place to another is no longer really something you can look forward to, at least in most car-based cities.
Absolutely. It's exhausting. It's emotionally exhausting. And you are trusting, you know, you have to trust other drivers to be paying attention. We get some of the same here too, of course, as a cargo biker mixing with traffic in New York City, but it isn't the same level, because once you hit Central Park or a protected bike lane, the whole experience totally changes, right? You don't have to be as vigilant you because you're not really, you know, navigating or negotiating with these drivers. So I completely understand. And I know that, you know, it can be hard to bike in areas where there isn't an infrastructure, or the infrastructure is still developing, or isn't quite in place where it needs to be to feel really safe to bike, especially with a 5-month-old, for sure. Yeah.
Do you ever get criticized as you're moving around the city for your choice of transport?
Absolutely. Not often. What's interesting is I've had a few very negative experiences, of course, a few where drivers will come up next to me and say, oh, you're so crazy. You know, you're putting your kids in danger by being in a bike. And, you know, you don't engage, right? You can't engage, because we all have our own level of, you know, choices that we make. But what's makes biking dangerous in these kinds of places without infrastructure are the drivers. So it's really not biking in itself is inherently not unsafe. It's the mixing and the infrastructure. And again, hoping that these drivers are paying attention. And it becomes a very, you know, can be scary. But statistically speaking, if we just look at raw numbers, the evidence suggests that biking is actually a very safe method of transportation. And there are far fewer deaths and injuries compared to car crashes and car fatalities. So, you know, of course, I'm not going to win in a drive-by comment, but you know, I can be very confident in my choices, saying, well, I am going to take the best safety precautions to get my kids where I need to go. And I'm going to be a safe cyclist, and I'm going to take protected bike lanes. And, you know, the more I'm biking and putting myself out there, the more I'm also at the forefront of people's thoughts. And, you know, showing that if we can get more people biking and more families biking, then actually infrastructure will continue to develop in response to those needs. So yes, I've been criticized, but every criticism is an opportunity to just say, you know what, we need more cyclists. We need more families on bikes.
Yeah. Well, also too, just the double standard there of like putting your child in a car is also extremely unsafe.
Exactly. But we accept that as part of our American culture, that we will put people in cars, we'll put our children in cars, and it can be very, very unsafe. And it's getting more and more unsafe as we recognize that there are more and more distracted drivers, you know. So, you know, I try to reduce as much as I can, but there's always a small risk to everything. You can get hit by a car just by walking on the street, right, when it jumps the curb. So, you know, I take those criticisms with a grain of salt and just know that I'm doing far more good than I am doing bad, and hopefully inspiring more families to choose this as an option, and inspiring politicians and policymakers and urban planners to incorporate biking as part of an option.
Yeah. Speaking of inspiration, let's talk about your Instagram. So can you tell us the story there? What inspired you to start Cargo Bike Mama, and what's your goal there?
Oh, yeah, sure. I love talking about my Instagram. you know, it's funny. I my husband is like my biggest champion. He's really wonderful. He started seeing how I was taking the cargo bike around New York City and taking pictures of the bike with my kids around these iconic places. And he's like, you need to start an Instagram account so that you can share your story with other people. Because you are the most unlikely person to have decided cargo biking was going to be your way of life. And my husband and I always talk about this, like in our house. I'm just like kind of scratching my head being like, how did I go from being literally a non-biker? I did not bike. I didn't grow up biking. I didn't have a bike as a teenager. I biked maybe a handful of times before I got my cargo bike into this sort of like Instagram account. And so he's like, if you can do it, is this like super cold lead, then other people can, you know, take your model and become a cargo biker. And so I started to showcase around New York City, and people got really excited to see. And, you know, New York cargo biking is still relatively uncommon. And it's, you know, these bikes are huge. They're very interesting, and they're total head turners. So people are always asking questions, you know, whenever I'm biking around, you know, New York City, they go, oh, that's so cool. What is that? Is that a stroller? Is that like, you know, did you make that? You know, where did you get that? And so it's really fun to sort of, you know, go into these conversations about cargo biking. Anyway, so that was sort of how it started. And then people really resonated with the message that I was starting to share, that cargo biking could be seen as an alternative to cars and a really efficient way of having different options of transit mobility. And, you know, of course, there's the whole sustainability element. They're much more cost effective than cars. They're, you know, health, you know, they're a health driven mechanism. You're exercising, even if you're e-biking. It's so they had all these other elements to it that have kind of surfaced in my Instagram more naturally. But it really, again, it just became this way of me expressing my love for cargo biking. And then it became much more of this advocacy, messaging, awareness, raising cargo biking as a car alternative. And that's just kind of how it grew.
Well, I feel like a big part of the formula that you're solving for people, especially other women, especially other moms who might be interested in this, is showing them how it's done, kind of bridging the like, wait, what would it look like to actually do this, right? Because it's, like you said, it's a big investment, which means you don't really have that much of a chance to like test drive this, you know, before making the jump. But someone like you, through your account, you're kind of showing them like, hey, look at what I'm doing. Watch my videos. Look at my photos. You can kind of get a feel for like what this is like, you know, as obviously like realizing primarily probably for other moms living in New York City, but just that feasibility, I think the ability to imagine and to visualize, like, is this actually feasible for my life? I think you're solving that by kind of just bringing people into your life and showing them like what it's like.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I hope so. That's, I think, one of the main driving points is, you know, I can see it from a perspective of being a non-biker. So like, I know the questions and the concerns and the confidence, you know, issues that might arise from somebody who doesn't cargo bike going into cargo biking, right? So, you know, there's the people who transform from being a biker to being a cargo biker, and then people who transform from being nothing to being a cargo biker. And I'm like that latter, which means that like I know the growing pains, right? And like the confidence concerns, and like, you know, how do you get your bike out in the rain, right? And how do you pick the gear, and how do you go to the grocery, and how do you even park your bike, and how do you park your bike where you're going, right? And so I think New York is this very interesting backdrop. It's like the extreme, you know, it's like, how do you park your bike on Broadway, right? We take our bike to school. Well, I park it in front of the theater, literally in front of the theater. It's a self-standing bike, and then I chain it. Yeah. And it's just sort of like demystifying a lot of
Yeah, I think that's the word I was looking for, demystifying. Yeah.
Very much so. And so it's, I think, and two is I'm petite, right? I'm about 5 feet, and I am 115 pounds, you know, soaking wet, you know? And so, and these bikes are, you know, 110 pounds bikes that then have people in them. And you really see that if I can do it, this like little, you know, teeny tiny person can do it, then most other people who are normal size or like more, you know, regular average size can do this actually quite well. And so I think, again, yeah, it's just demystifying, say, well, there's all these challenges and here's how you, you know, how you self-stand your bike, right? I've had somebody ask me like, well, how do you put the kickstand up? And these are totally normal and rational questions. Or if you're petite, like how do you jump off the saddle when you're stopping? How do you get out of the seat when you're stopping? And how do your, you know, my feet don't totally touch the ground. It's like, how do I navigate the weight balance in those cases? And so I just try to show like all the different ways that that's possible and how it makes it really doable, even if you know nothing about bikes. And I also want to mention, you don't need to be a mechanic. You don't need to know bike maintenance. You can still own these bikes and support your local bike shop for brake pad changes, questions.
Yeah.
Like I don't do any maintenance, right? I'm very happy to like support my local bike shop when anytime my bike needs servicing. And so I think that's also a big transition from,
right,
you know, not being a bike owner to being a bike owner.
Maddie, I didn't put these questions in the list, but as I'm listening to you talk, I kind of want to like ask you some fun questions. So maybe we did like a lightning round, but can you tell us of like what was your funniest learning curve with your cargo bike?
Maybe the funniest, I mean, the number of times I fell over in my bike, like I'll be like, I'm a seasoned cargo biker and I never fall, and then I'll fall over, right? So like, I think that's kind of sort of standing up and being like, I can't believe I just misjudged the weight again, right? Or the incline again. And I think that's kind of a funny thing is when you're like, you're getting cocky. I get cocky that I'm never going to have any problems because I'm this like Instagram influencer who has like a billion bikes and thousands of miles. And then you fall over and you're like, oh, I was just being silly, right? Like I just misjudged again. So that's, I think, a kind of a funny thing is like, you know that falls are part of it and you just sort of get back up and laugh it off.
What is your favorite fashion on like fashionable but still biking moment? Like I've seen your photos, like you've worn some pretty awesome outfits like to like fancy events and you still go on your cargo bike. Do you have like a fun fashion moment?
Yeah, well, let's see. I think one of the things, I don't think about it too much anymore. I just, I'm sort of like, well, it won't get tangled in my wheels. Like that's kind of what I'm.
That's like the bare minimum.
You can tie things up around your waist. I think what gets really a lot of comments are my rain gear, which I like, people think I look like I fell out of like RoboCop, you know, because I'll have the visor, I'll have this like amazing trench coat and these grippy boots, and like I kind of look like a futuristic cop, so that's kind of fun. I find that a lot of fun to wear. But then I'll wear like, you know, velvet dresses when I go do family photo shoots with my bikes, or you know, you just throw your shoes in the bucket. Like you put the shoes you want to bike in, the shoes you want to bike in, and then you put your nice shoes in the bucket, and then you change, right? So that's the beauty of having a cargo bike, is you can carry all the like accessories that you need. So I'll bike in everything. I'll bike in fancy dresses. I'll bike in, you know, RoboCop outfits. I'll bike in, you know, palazzos and skinny jeans and Converses, and I don't want to wreck my stilettos, so like I will be in those.
And some listeners might not know, but your bikes are electric, so it's not like you're like heaving and huffing like and getting all sweaty and stuff all over the city.
Totally, they are all electric bikes. They, you exert very little effort. And, you know, some of my bikes even have throttles, so I don't even have to pedal if I don't want to. But most of the time I have the, what's called pedal assist, which means the battery kicks in and helps make it like sort of at the same level of walking. That's kind of how you can imagine the level of exertion, even when you're going up hills. So I never arrive at my, you know, photo shoot sweaty and dripping because I have done very little like excessive exertion.
Okay, one more fun question. What has been the largest or craziest item you've carried in your cargo bike?
I carried a campaign chest, a probably 150-pound campaign chest that is like beautiful piece of furniture. They're heavy, they're wood, they have like brass detailing. And it did not fit inside the bucket. So it's sort of like it, you put it in and it's kind of hanging out at this V. And it's just huge. And I can barely see kind of over the top of it. And that definitely got a lot of head turns. So like huge pieces of furniture. The other one that's really, really fun is I'll do big donation runs. And then usually my kids want to come in. So I'll have a kid in the bucket, then like five huge garbage bags filled with donations.
Oh,
like,
my word. On the kid.
It was happily like holding it as we ride through the streets of New York City.
So when it comes to kind of people that you've talked to, maybe through your Instagram or other means, that are thinking about rethinking their own car dependence and opting for like a cargo bike or just something different? What do you think keeps people from making that jump?
I think that there are a few reasons. I think one is the cost, right? So depending on the cargo bike you're getting, they can be very expensive purchases. And in some cases, they can be upwards of $10,000, $12,000, $15,000, which if you're going to spend that much money, a lot of people rationalize, well, why not just get another car? And so I think that's one of the things. Of course, the response to that argument is that the costs of upkeep and the residual costs are so low. You don't have gas, you don't have car insurance, maintenance is really inexpensive. And so they do pay for themselves, you know, after you make that initial purchase. But that can be a kind of a daunting thing. Of course, there are also, you know, there's a price range of cargo bikes. You can buy long tails where the kids sit on the back, electric long tails. And, you know, price ranges start at $1,500 or $2,000, which is a more feasible price point for some families. So I think that's one of them. Two is where you keep these bikes. My bikes are massive. They are not indoor bikes. I keep them on the streets of New York City, and that always raises some eyebrows because they're concerned about theft or vandalism. And, you know, there's strategies in place to keep them from being harmed or messed with. And, you know, I'm going on 5 years now, and I've had only one incidence of vandalism where someone went in my bucket and stole my kids' helmets. And my husband recently had his bike stolen, but that was not because he had it stored the way that I prefer to have mine stored. It was because he used a very weak chain, left it outside with its battery on, and some clippers and just rode off with the bike. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really unfortunate thing. But of course, we have insurance. So like when the worst happens, which the worst is getting your bike stolen, you have insurance for these things. And so the insurance process is simple. You file the claim, or at least we did, and we were able to recoup the cost of our bike quickly. So I think that's another thing. I also think infrastructure can be very scary. It's very hard for people to go in like more suburban or areas where there aren't protected bike lanes and see themselves as cargo bikers, but, you know, or have really far distances to go. And that can keep people from thinking about biking. But of course, the response is that for the vast majority of people, they're going 1 to 3 miles, right? And usually to in most places, and certainly not in all, but in many places, that is a very bikeable distance. And if you have residential streets or smaller streets or sidewalks, then those can become your options.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like anybody not living in a big city would definitely probably relate to that last one of like, well, I love this idea, but we don't have any bike lanes here. We don't have any infrastructure here. And I totally understand that. I mean, that's the boat I find myself in, you know, wanting to move in that direction and just kind of accepting, all right, we're just going to use the neighborhoods and we're just going to wear some hi-vis and we're going to do this, you know, when the time comes. Speaking of car culture, many people listening to this podcast probably don't live in New York City or a city with like other, you know, like public transit and stuff like that. So they might be surprised to hear someone from the big city talking about giving up cars and opting for biking. Can you just kind of give our listeners a little insight perspective as to like what this conversation is like or what transit is like in New York City, especially for families, and how prevalent car culture is there as well?
Sure. So I do want to preface this say, and actually I did have a car here in New York City for many years. And so I'm very familiar with what it's like having a car in the city, or at least I was 10 years ago when I had a car. And car culture is still very common. You find a lot of families who live not necessarily in the center of the city, but in some of the more peripheral neighborhoods, like I'm in Harlem or in Brooklyn, people have cars. And they have cars all over. They just pay for parking and it's very expensive. Or they do the alternate side parking dance, which is where you go and you double park your car and you sit in your car for an hour and a half while the street cleaner comes and then you fight for your spot. And so it is definitely, you know, a lot of people in New York City, when they have kids, they either think the option is to move out of the city or get a car. But of course we do have public transit, which I'm going to get to in a second, which we have great public transit. But it is a very common thing. And so during the pandemic, especially, we had people who never had a car and decided they were going to get a car. This was the year they were going to get a car. And so, you know, it's certainly like I have those conversations and I'm saying, well, you know, what about not a car? What about a bike instead? And they're saying, well, we can't get, you know, to the New Jersey as easily, and you can't get to this, you know, the places on the Hudson. And that's all true, right? There are areas of New York and outside of New York City that do require a car, and that is just one of the failings, I think, of American infrastructure, right? So if you go comparatively to the Netherlands, you can literally bike the entire country. There is no limitation when it comes to that. So that, again, I think that's a failing of our system. But with that being said, New York City has great public transit. We have train lines that run all over New York City to all the boroughs. We have the Metro North, which takes you upstate. And we have Amtrak. We have the Long Island Railroad. So we really do have quite an extensive public transit system, including buses. And of course, there's abundance of Ubers if you really need to take a car somewhere. And so there's certainly a lot of options for people who don't have a car and who don't want a car and who don't bike either. So that's one of the privileges, I think, of living in the city.
Yeah. But I still found when I lived there that there was still kind of a car first mentality, even though you were living in one of the most multimodal cities in the country, which always surprised me.
For sure. And, you know, everybody I know, a ton of people who have cars. And when I had a car, it didn't really make sense to me, right? Because again, I do most of my stuff in the city and I really don't want to be spending the time for parking. And this is one of the problems with the New York City is that we have free public parking. You know, street parking is free. And that is bonkers when we think about how finite our space is in New York City. We have free parking, but we don't have pedestrianized plazas. And that is something that just is mind-boggling to me. So, you know, again, even in, you know, arguably one of the most, you know, worldly or global-minded cities, we still have this American infrastructure of cars and parking first, pedestrians and cyclists last.
Yeah. All right. So talking infrastructure, you've started sharing some perspectives on infrastructure on your channel. Can you just share with us what you've started to notice about bike infrastructure in New York City and where you see room for improvement?
Absolutely. So one of our biggest challenges is having protected bike lanes that go throughout the city. We have a lot of paint, right? So one of our main ways of indicating a bike lane is just literally paint and what we call sharrows, right? Little arrows on the ground that we hope drivers are paying attention to. And of course, with our car-centric mentality, they're not, right? We find people, cars, not delivery people, not, you know, trucks. We find residents just double parked in the bike lane all the time. And that's a very dangerous experience for me because that means and I have to go mix with cars and traffic. And so they're pushing me out of the bike lane, which is not really that safe anyway because it's along parked cars, which is also known as the door zone. So, you know, we have drivers who can just open their doors into bike lanes. So really we have very, very weak infrastructure. And the idea that, you know, this idea that paint isn't infrastructure because it's not, right? It's a request. It's an ignored request by drivers to pay attention. And so really what I would love to see more of is protected bike lanes like the Central Park West bike lane. We have the West Side Highway, which is beautiful. We have protected bike lanes up and down Columbus Avenue and Amsterdam and on First and Second. And so these are the kinds where it is separated space, right? So there are no cars there. It is just bikes. And what's interesting is you actually can use parking and parked cars to create a safe boundary. And that is technically paint, but it is more intelligently placed paint that then protects the cyclists as well.
I like that phrase that you said of, that's not infrastructure, that's a request or something like that. It sounds like part of where the infrastructure conversation needs to go is kind of thinking outside of this sort of like, if you please, dear driver, please do not park here. Exactly. if you can oblige us by please sharing this lane with bike. I don't know why I suddenly have a fake British accent, but, you know, that's kind of how some of the infrastructure feels. It's sort of like, if you can, please slow down. If you're in the mood versus like, how about you not be in this lane? Otherwise you'll pop a tire.
Yeah, exactly. We should never have to be begging for safe, you know, biking infrastructure or a safe bike path. It's just like, you know, we shouldn't be begging drivers to be kind and thoughtful. It should just be mandated because they don't have a choice, right? And by putting the bike lane, the parking next to the bike lane that creates the sort of bollard type, you know, if we just had bollards, right? Or, I mean, also it's an enforcement issue, right? We don't have law enforcement issuing tickets, right? There is no consequence for parking in the bike lane or double parking or any of those things. So that's also a failing. And it's just like, you know, it's a, this combination of like, I don't want to beg. I don't want to beg for the drivers to pay attention. I don't want to, you know, beg law enforcement to issue tickets and uphold things. We just need infrastructure where nobody has to think about it. And what's so frustrating about all of this is bad infrastructure impacts everybody. Drivers hate it, right? So if we have paint, that means that we have cars that are stopped in the bike lane, which means then we have cyclists in traffic, which slows down traffic, which drivers absolutely hate. So literally nobody is winning with this. And that's what I don't seem to understand, why, you know, policymakers and politicians can't seem to like get it together. It's like, let's increase efficiency. Let's increase, you know, mobility. Let's not piss anybody off. And let's just have safe spaces.
Well, and the thing too about like actually clear, concise infrastructure that reduces the amount of choices that drivers have to make, I think is a win for drivers, right? Because I just wrote about this where it's like, we need to reduce the mental load for drivers of like these ambiguous design choices that are kind of like, you're not really supposed to park here, but if it's an emergency and you'll be really quick, you just have to run inside really quick to grab a package and it won't take that long, I guess you can sort of maybe, you know? It's like, well, if you just line that thing with cement, you get rid of ambiguity for everybody and you eliminate one decision that the drivers have to make, freeing up all that mental energy to do more important things like drive safe, right? And so I think it's doing a favor for everyone. It's like, let's reduce the mental load for drivers, let's improve safety for the cyclists, and let's just get rid of all this ambiguous infrastructure that like you said is basically just a request, and it just leaves everybody in a state of like insecurity because they're not really sure what's going to happen. And that's like the number one thing you want to eliminate from the road, is like that type of insecurity and that type of like uncertainty.
Absolutely, right? And we want to keep drivers as focused as possible on making the right choices, right? And if we don't give them choices to make, then they do make the right choices because there's no other option. And the other thing I think is that we don't need to be an us versus them. It's that by creating safer infrastructure and having more cyclists, we actually reduce traffic, which means that everybody moves faster and everybody moves safer. Drivers don't want more cars. They want clear pathways. And so let's work together to get cars off the streets and turn those drivers into cyclists, right? Those who don't need to be driving into cyclists. And, you know, we're not going to get there by scaring them and, you know, making it really, you know, unsafe for them, or the perception that it's really unsafe.
You mentioned that your family loves to travel to Europe. I'm curious, have you been able to spend any time in Paris since they started really heavily pushing more biking there over the past few years?
Yes, we were there last summer. And actually,
okay. I'm just curious what it was like, what you saw.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, their mayor really transformed the city into this like biking haven. The Seine is now biking, you know, so you're biking along these beautiful pathways. You can bike all over the city in just a safe, protected space and see the Eiffel Tower and see the Notre Dame. It was absolutely amazing. And so we are very excited to go back because we really enjoyed biking around the city so much.
When you go this year, you'll also have to check out the school streets. I don't know if you've been following that initiative. I just watched a video on it from Streets Blog on YouTube. And it's all about how they're taking the streets and the parking spaces that's usually used for cars in front of schools, and they're turning them into plazas so that it's really giving children the safer transition space between running out of school, and instead of them running out of school and being really excited to see their parents, right, and then having to immediately worry about moving traffic, they have this whole plaza now. And they're using them as like they're planting like lots more green things. That was not very eloquent. Plants. That's what a green thing is. They're doing more like green investment. But they're just creating these like third spaces, and they're pretty substantial. They're not tiny little sidewalks. They're like plazas, and really creating a third space for the community, for parents to come hang out. Some of them have these huge red containers full of games and toys that you know, kids and parents can enjoy. So you'll have to check that out too, I'm sure.
I will.
You'll enjoy that.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I'll have to look it up. I mean, that sounds absolutely amazing. And, you know, if Paris can do it, then New York City can do it, right?
So I'd like to think.
I'd like to think that too, right? That's incredible. Right.
Well, to close this episode, Maddie, I'd love for you to tell us a little bit about your neighborhood in New York City. What do you love about it? I know you just moved to Harlem. You told me this when we had our intro chat. And if someone was coming to your neighborhood, if you're really familiar with Harlem or maybe you're still exploring, you can also talk about the neighborhood you were in before or just New York City. I didn't want to put the pressure of you giving recommendations for all of New York City, but take this where you want it. If someone was coming to hang out with Maddie or see New York City or see Harlem or see a neighborhood that you love for a couple of hours, what are some of your top local business recommendations? It could be like coffee shops, museums, places to shop, eat, et cetera.
Sure. Well, I do want to quickly amend something. I actually just moved down. So we've been in Harlem for about 20 years.
Oh, perfect. There you go. So okay.
I love this neighborhood that we are in. We're in South Harlem. And I just, I mean, we are up, we have so many parks. So I would say there's so much to see in Harlem, right? We have Central Park, which is not far from us. We have Morningside Park, which is beautiful. We have amazing small mom and pop coffee shops, little restaurants, bars. There's an area called Mount Morris Park, which I really love. It's all these beautiful brownstones. But during the day, they and most of the nights, they block off one of the streets. So there's actually a street that doesn't allow cars. And so I love that. It's not far from here. And so we go there to go trick-or-treating. And, you know, we walk around that area. But it also has some restaurants around it. So it's one of these, like, very interesting areas that resembles a lot of, like, the European plaza style as close as we can get to it. So I love that. I love walking down 125th Street because you've got the Apollo Theater. You've got, you know, just the vibrancy of the neighborhood is just, it's just always alive. And so I love it. We've been here for a really long time. And I would recommend anyone who is visiting New York City to come and spend an afternoon just strolling the streets and seeing what Harlem is all about.
Have you ever been to Max Cafe?
So funny. I have not been to Max Cafe. It's so close to our new place.
Oh, you have to go.
I know. I've heard of it and it's been on our radar. We love, there's like a great Ethiopian place that we love to go to. We love to go to Vivino, which is around here. We love to go to Double Dutch Coffee, a lot of these smaller places. But Max Cafe is on my list.
Oh, you have to go. It is my favorite. Okay, so one of my favorite winter traditions, you have to do this now that you have real winter. We do not have real winter here in Texas. Okay, so you have to do this at the very least for me. But ideally, you'd get a really good snowy day and you'd go to the Cloisters. So you would head up to the Cloisters, just walk around, enjoy the beautiful architecture. If you make it inside the museum, I just love the Cloisters, especially if you go on a snowy day, because when you leave that train station, it looks like you're going into Narnia, you know, where it's like all the stone and you come out and it feels like you've gone to another world. It's magical. Yes. And then you get on the bus, or in your case, you ride your cargo bike. I don't even remember what street Max Cafe, it's close to Columbia. And then you go to Max Cafe and I used to get like their paninis or their just coffees, lattes and stuff. It's just a wonderful place. Hopefully it's still the same. I remember being like half of it was really just people who were enjoying. It wasn't a ton of laptops. It didn't seem to me like one of those places that were just overrun by students and their computers. But yes, the Cloisters and Max Cafe, definitely my favorite traditions.
I feel like the Max Cafe must be on Amsterdam. I'll have to look it up.
But yeah, I have to look it up. I know it's Max with two X's. But yeah, it feels like being in Europe for a minute. Hopefully it's still as I remember it, but it's a lovely place. So hopefully you'll have to check it out.
That sounds wonderful.
Well, it's been so fun talking to you, Maddie. Thanks for coming onto the show. And if you're listening, we'll put links in the show notes so you can find Maddie's Instagram. And if you're thinking about embracing that adventurous world of cargo biking, I'm sure she would be happy to answer your questions. Thanks for listening to this show. If there's someone that you think we should be interviewing, please let us know. We have a form where you can nominate a guest that will be linked in the show notes as well. And I will be back in 2 weeks with another conversation.